Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. I'm Eugene Godso, and this week we're starting our new series where we interview the buyers of technology and learn the do's and don'ts of selling right from the people who are actually doing the buying. The end goal really is just to build better alignment between sellers and buyers so that everybody learns and everybody wins. So this week we're joined by Rakib Azad, and we're going to talk through one, how to align your product to a company's main priorities when you're selling with them. Two, why doing your research is so important and it can kill your deal if you don't. And three, what are some pet peeves and things sellers should avoid if they don't want to end up on a blocked or do not buy list? Rakib is an incredible resource to speak with about this. He has an extensive finance background. He was part of a few large retail organizations like Foot Locker before he transitioned into the New York tech scene. He was the head of finance at Ladders for a few years before joining MongoDB. So he was the head of FP&A and an integral part of their finance team for over 4 years pre and post IPO. So one of the biggest tech names in New York, before joining Chainalysis, where he's been there for about 2 years now. He's the VP and head of finance. So clearly has a ton of experience buying, but also a ton of experience not buying a lot of software. So let's jump right in. Rakib, excited to have you on the podcast. How you doing?
Great to see you. Excited to be here. I'm doing great. I'm already digging out of the new year work here, but very excited to spend some time with you today.
Yep. Busy. I know there's a lot going on at Chainalysis. We'll dig into that a little bit later. I'm really excited to talk to you. You've bought some things from me. You also not bought some things from me. And I just went over your background, but we'll jump into it here.
Absolutely.
The first topic is you being a champion for a product or a vendor, right? So you're working with a salesperson or founder. You're excited. You think you can help the org. And now it's up to you to kind of champion that product to someone above, CEO, CFO, head of a department. Can you tell me how you think about what's important when you are positioning a product to be purchased and you're trying to get approval from a CEO or CFO?
Sure. And for me, there's multiple angles that I take when I present a use case, right? When it comes to software, yes, economics is at its core, but my main thing is, does this piece of software solve a major pain point for me, for the company? Will this help us, one, scale? Will it help us set a foundation, right? There's things that we take a look at, especially in the finance realm, right? There's a lot of this stuff is foundational, and I'm always thinking several years ahead. So when I present to, I've presented to CFOs, now I present to a CEO, it's a little bit different dynamics, right? CFOs will focus more on the economics of a deal. So I've spent a lot of time going through the deal economics, right? So, hey, at MongoDB, we were a high growth company. And often, we want to look at the economics. Hey, if we're, our seat demand will grow by X percentage, we should get X amount of economics. And I'll have to review that with the CFO and make him feel good about it. But then you start going over the tool itself and paint that picture. What do we expect the outcome to be? After implementing the software, we do think that we're going to get, more efficient, or we can now hire less people, thus there's ROI there. That gets involved in any presentation. Again, yeah. more focused when it's to a CFO. To a CEO, it is all about the business problems and challenges you're solving. The ROI might pop up at high level, but it's really, you're a champion for the vision of that software, right? Because you felt this pain, you believe you could solve the issue, and then you present that in a way that's persuasive. So for me, I've presented it in multiple different ways, but it's one where I need to have the conviction that it's going to solve a major issue.
Got it. So if I'm hearing you right, there's almost two parts of it. One is understanding the persona of who you're working with, right? CFO and a CEO care about different things. And then you have to outline, here's how it's going to help me, my team. Here's how it's going to help you, your department. And if it's the CEO, here's the big picture and why we actually need this thing. Is that right?
And you want to thread, the themes that you're trying to solve as a company. Sometimes, we will have annual strategic goals. And right now, some people might be familiar with the OKR framework. We're undergoing that here. We've launched it last year. We're going into this year. And it's a very rigorous process to align strategic initiatives for the company. And if you could say, hey, this tool is going to actually help do XYZ, the CEO is really, you know, plugged into the OKRs, that's going to, you know, go a long way. And that, hey, this software, piece of software is actually going to help us get to where we need to go. So if that alignment from strategy down to the presentation of why the software is the right thing to invest in, that's going to be powerful, right? So then, you know, having the help from the vendor, so, you know, get that story across is a key thing.
Oh yeah, because I always like to say, if your product is genuinely helping solve the biggest business problem a company is having, you have a good shot. So it's really up to you and your champion to understand what are the big business problems. OKRs are usually aligned towards those, right? It's like, hey, does this product actually align to this, and how so? Making sure that's clear. So when you present, it's like a clear thread, product to business problem to OKR.
Exactly. And that's, and then your life will be made easy because you made that connection. If you don't have that, you know, that set up, then it will be a little bit harder. If it's out of context, it's not on the radar of a CEO as a business problem, then it's going to be a tougher sell, right? Because like it's not been like flagged. So again, like as a, you need, this is something that has to be on the radar of a CEO, that this could be a problem for the business, right? I think to have a good, really good shot to sell them on the vision of why you want to invest in this piece of software.
I love it. I think that helps transition into now you as head of finance. You have a lot of people selling you on, hey, Rakib, I really think we should buy the software. It's going to help us XYZ. How do you think about that now? Is it different? Like, what are you looking for when they're presenting to you?
I'll be honest, I'm not your typical all about here's the savings, here's the economics. I do try to think through holistically and everything, because I do try to see what could be a potential ROI in the future. I'm open-minded when somebody comes with software. What I don't like is when somebody's coming, hey, this is a miracle maker, and doesn't give me the context. So I often get that, hey, this is going to solve our issues, but didn't give me the meat of it, why it will solve it, because I do want to see some rigor from a stakeholder that they've done their homework, not just because like they're promised this grand vision, but then there's nothing to back that up, right? So I'm usually turned off if there's not this like, you know, homework done which will include, you know, looking at case studies, looking at actually getting referrals, reference. I'm big on references, right? So that's, to me, yes, you know, they have a deal with the company to, you know, to speak on their behalf maybe, but like, I do think you could get some good insights from somebody who uses the product and has made it successful. So have they done their homework in that regards, right? And then also tying back to like, what problem is it solving? Like, it'd be nice if it was something that's on my radar, because then that gives me more comfort. Like, hey, I've heard this is an issue, whether it may not be anything to do with my team, but somewhere in the org, I've heard that this was an issue. And I'm like, all right, that makes sense. Okay, you've done your homework. And then I'll do my finance thing, right? Like, hey, like, yeah, you know, like, have you thought about like the competitors, our RFPs? And we do, you know, this is, we do use a service called Vendor. I'm not sure if you've heard of them. They actually help us, you know, take a look at software, and they'll help do RFPs. They'll look at the economics of things. So I want to make sure, hey, we got the right terms in place.
Yeah.
We have protections on, like, you know, like, usually I'm not like a fan of auto renewals, right? And things like that. So, you know, those are things that for my finance seat, I'm also taking a look at, but it's really, you know, is the economics make sense in a high level? Does it solve, you know, business challenges? And have you holistically thought about this? Is this really the right tool to solve that challenge?
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I heard again two different things. Like, one is ties back to the first thing. Like, they need to know your persona. Someone, if I assumed, oh, Rakib's head of finance, he only cares about numbers and savings, that's all we need in the presentation, that might be true for some heads of finance, but for you, you actually think very strategically and big picture. That is an important component. But if that's all there is and it's not tying to the other business components, it might be a miss. And then the second is, did that person actually do their homework? Did they put rigor in? Hey, did they just see a demo and it seems flashy and they're trying to throw it your way? Or, hey, I've really thought through how this impacts the business, and I have case studies, I've done references with similar companies, and here's why it's a safe and good pick, along with all the things it can do. Is that right?
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. You know, the homework means that they, you know, they've actually invested themselves into it and like have skin in the game too, right? Because like that's one of my things, and my mantra for my team is like, we're making a lot of investments out there. I want to kind of have checks with our stakeholders. Like, are they actually getting out of the tool what they promise they think they're, I mean, what they thought they were going to get, right? So we really, you know, want to make sure people are, you know, intellectually honest that this is like something that it's really going to make a difference for the company, right? Because some of these are, you know, sizable investments. And so I don't want somebody to go there, get the tool, never utilize it properly. And then boom, it languishes, right? That's like, and I've seen that before, right? So that's not an ideal outcome.
Yeah, it's something that I think isn't talked about enough, but someone in your position, you've done this multiple times. Like you've seen cases where you've bought something, paid money, and it either wasn't used or barely used. So it's the reason you have to put, you know, put your head of finance hat on and actually do the scrutiny there.
Absolutely.
Okay. The next portion is a lot of our listeners, they're either early stage sellers, maybe they're founders, seed stage, Series A, Series B. And it can be a little harder for them to say, hey, here's our roster of clients that we work with that are Fortune 100 or exactly similar to you. Is there a way that you've seen or done yourself that helps validate, hey, this is an early stage company or product, I think we should go with them?
Yeah, and I think this is where you think about if it's not a big lift of proof of concept sometimes, right, to get that that trust factor. And so for me, I mean, the Chainalysis, you know, the growth has been explosive. So I was probably a little bit more open-minded early in my tenure, of like a little less than 2 years ago, to now, because now in the context of us thinking about potentially getting ready to become a public company, standards are a little bit higher. But for me, the proof of concept is something that could be still key, even at this stage, you know, try out a early stage company. And then demo is key, but to really help have an immersive demo, right? That is showing like real use cases, right? And making us comfortable, hey, like we, you know, these are the challenges we have, like, let's see it on your tool. Like, yeah, seeing it happen, it will be important, right? So for us, you know, I'm always open-minded if it's trying to solve something really new, a challenge that like there's no competitors out there. Those companies may have an easier time selling to me than ones that are trying to get into a very competitive space, right? And it's trying to be, you know, maybe an upstart in a competitive space. So there's like degrees of freedom I might give an early stage software based on what they're, you know, trying to solve, and then we take it from there. But it's so each one will have its unique path with us for evaluating them.
Got it. So I'm hearing two things again. Like one is, hey, can you make it low risk, right? Low barrier to entry, whether it's a pilot or a proof of concept, so you actually can get in and see it. And then the second thing is, when you're on those first early calls and demoing, are you showing something that's unique or definitely better than what's out there? And is it solving real problems, right? That's right. Going to get you interested to take the next steps.
No, you're spot on, because for me, you'll have to stand out in that regards. If it's something that I feel like I've seen this before, where the initial kind of intro to the company is something like where I'm like, hey, I don't see anything unique about this, then it's really a non-starter. A lot oftentimes I see a reach out and I'm like, hey, I know a bunch of companies are bigger do the exact same thing, right? Like I don't get drawn in, because I'm like, what's the difference maker here? And you know, it is tough for a newer company where you're trying to, you know, solve issues that, you know, other companies may have solved, but they're doing something differently, but then they don't get that across in the initial outreach. And then, you know, then it's maybe a losing battle from there on. You know, in a given day, you know, I'm getting dozens and dozens of emails sometimes, right, from different vendors. And it, you know, like you need to kind of hook me, you know, pretty early on, even in the subject line, right? So it's a tough game.
I love that. Like when I was working with my teams, especially at TripActions before, right, like, if you don't understand what the status quo or competitors are doing, you could just be rattling off a bunch of things that they also do, you know?
Exactly. That happens often, right? And I've been getting a lot of, you know, these like PEO, EOR companies are popping up, and like all of them to me are doing the same things. And I'm getting a lot of outreach and they're like saying, hey, we're doing, but the messaging is like, hey, they're solving something really like hasn't been solved before. But I'm like, hey, I just saw three other companies are trying to do this. And I haven't seen like anyone who has said, hey, this is what we do differently, right? This is a recent example that's salient to me. But then I'm like, all right, like, why would I even bother engaging if I don't see something that's, you know, that stands out in their offering?
Right, right. Or is it thinking be like, hey, here's what makes this really unique and stand out. And you say, hey, that looks really interesting. Then as you go through a process, you meet, okay, can they actually do the same things other people do too? I assume so, but I'll check that later, versus like, here's how to make your profile. Like everybody can make a profile. Got it. Cool. Next thing, super controversial in the sales world, but ROI, like ROI analyses.
Yeah. ROI, I always take those with a grain of salt, I'll be honest. Okay. I've never I don't think an ROI analysis from the vendors ever was the linchpin to why I signed the deal. I always will be initially skeptical, and I would want to understand what the assumptions are. So I have because a lot of times, like, the assumptions are, like, you know, either like very like standard in this, and it's might not apply to my company. And there's some leaps of faith of what's going to happen to, you know, our end to get to those numbers, right? So
yeah.
For me, it's a good data point. I'll take it if you have it, but I'll obviously ask some questions around it, you know. And again, for me, these are things I love to corroborate with somebody who's actually used the tool and felt and could say, hey, yes, this actually makes sense. So I will try to either, obviously, I ask for references often, but I also, see in my own network, somebody uses the tool, right? And then see, hey, is this the type of savings you think you're getting from using it, right? But if there's no data points, then yeah, like, and it's a new, very new tool, I'm going to, use it as a data point as part of my overall evaluation. But again, I've never, unless there's something that is really, and I don't recall in my career, it's something that's like, hey, like, oh yeah, like they completely proved the ROI ahead of my actually making that purchase. So I think it's worth at least for a company to think about putting together an ROI framework if possible, but I just don't see it being the main driver why I make that final decision.
So someone in your role, I think the metrics are still important. Like, what do you think you're actually going to save and achieve through different things? But it's really one data point. But I still got to do my due diligence and my rigor and see how this matches up and kind of cross-check and actually come up with my own projections.
Some cross-checks, but then, because some of the ROI has a lot of just things that are not obvious to, you can't really figure that out until it actually happens, right? So there's some leap of faith there. But then, for me, the economics is like, hey, you're solving the same issue, but you happen to have the seat cost is less than the competitor. And then boom, that's an easy ROI right there, right? And then like, that's great, right? Because, we love the tech and you're actually cheaper than the competitor. And that's, makes my life easy, right? But that's a real tangible thing for me. And that's obviously has more weight. And then I always appreciate if somebody appreciates that I'm part of, I'm lucky enough to have been part of two fast growing companies, MongoDB and Chainalysis. And like, they understand that this is going to be, potentially a lucrative deal for them if we continue to grow, but like, give us the economics, right? In years two or three based on growth. And if you do set that, for a multi-year deal, offering those things like that, right? In actually seeing that this could be beneficial long-term relationships that are forming here.
Yeah, that's something I felt. I haven't had like a super long sales career, but the relationships really stem with you from company to company. It's easy to get into the day-to-day of like, this is my role, this product in this company is my life. But you're going to meet these people again and they're going to hop on a podcast out of nowhere. All right. Yeah, this is probably my favorite part to ask, but you've worked with a lot of different salespeople and wanted to get a sense of, is there something that stands out that in working with the salesperson before that they've either gone above and beyond or just something they did really well that made your job a lot easier as the champion of a product?
No, I think for me, when the salesperson does the homework on the company, it's great because then they already have better context of like, they have a bespoke view of it. All right. And, and it's not a very common thing when this happens. Right. So this is one that, is not expected, but then it goes a long way that they've actually tried to understand the context even before having that first live conversation. Right. So they could come up with like why, that solution is ideal for us because we're in XYZ stage or we're, in this part of our life cycle. Right. So then, that's always good, right? To start off on a good foot there. And for me, like, support along the way is like, openly kind of say, hey, I can connect you to references, taking offering to be, hey, I'm going to go hop on a call with XYZ people in your company to help, get things going. Like, I think you did that with TripActions at MongoDB, right? I think you may have met with like, I don't remember anymore, but multiple people, right?
Yeah.
And you show the patience that, I think you're an example of one that, was very patient in the process. You weren't overly burdensome, but with the right amount of like, check-ins, right? I think phasing check-ins, because sometimes honestly, check-ins are not a bad thing if it's phased out appropriately, right? Because sometimes you're so busy, I'm like, I might even forget, like then, well, yeah, I'm like, I need to keep the ball moving here, right? So like finding that right phasing of when to check in, you know, having a good instinct, right? Of when's the right time to come in, when's the right time to, you know, like maybe loop in your manager if you need to, right? And just having just a finger on the pulse on what's going on, right? So then some of that could be honestly innate skill, some of it could be just experience, but like, you know, it's like, you know, shepherding the process in a way that no one feels forced in the process is key, right? And you feel like, hey, like this person is looking out for your, you know, best interest and not trying to jam something down your throat, right? And you know, it's a little bit of a high level explanation. There's other, like, you know, finite things people have done that have been great as well, that, you know, that, but I think that's the high level kind of approach, right? Like, you know, really doing the homework on the company and then helping guide in a way that's not forceful.
Yeah, like one nugget from there, we always debate, oh, like how often do we need to check in? Do we call them? Do we text them? Do we email them? Do we mail them something to their house? Like, and then I found, hey, why don't you, if this is a champion that you're working with and you're building this trust, why not ask them, hey, like, I know we're not sprinting to the finish line. What's the best way to keep this on the radar? Do we have a check-in on the calendar every other week? Can I send you a text? Is that okay? Because then you don't have this out of the blue text where someone's like, oh my God, they're texting me. It's there's like this collaboration there.
Setting expectations is key, because like asking to be, hey, can I text you, is different than you just text me, right? Because sometimes I have been like texting, I'm like, hey, like it's kind of like not expected, right? So yeah. So for me, yeah, setting expectations is key up front. And then for me, one of the things I think you and I had discussed in a previous conversation is knowing when to acknowledge it's not a fit, because again, like trying to jam something when it's sometimes almost clear it's not fit because they're trying to hit a quota, trying to sell. Like, yes, it, like, I get it, like the pressures, you know, a salesperson faces, but look at the bigger picture here, because sometimes, you know, I might truly be like, hey, this is a great piece of technology. Just unfortunately, like the vision's there, but just won't fit us at this stage, especially some of the core workflows that we have in finance, like order to cash, procure to pay, payroll. Those are tough to be going with a really early stage company when you're trying to get public company ready. And I'm getting pitched things every day now, right? From really mm-hmm. early stages. And I just, some of them, I'm like, hey, you're onto something here. So I think, you know, establishing the rapport and setting up for a longer term relationship where I could potentially even refer you to other earlier stage companies, right? And so I think that marks like a really good salesperson, because they could actually, they'll think longer term. Yes, you know, the results today matter, but then you have to figure out who's the right company to really pound on, because you have the conviction that truly is the right fit. In somebody like me, if it's like you're too early stage, you nurture that relationship. So for me, that's, I think, would go a long way, because then you utilize me as a resource, even though I'm not going to be a customer today. And again, you never know where I'll be in the future, or, you know, I'm advising a bunch of companies, and here's a software you guys are, you know, many years away from going public, but this is software that might get there with you guys, and it's solving a bunch of issues that I'm seeing, right? Because, you know, there's issues I see in software that are quote unquote standard, that, you know, I'd love newer tools to solve, but it just, then there's trade-offs, right? And there's a risk that you have to take.
Yeah. And it could be as simple as the timing is off, right? It's yes, hey, exactly. I love everything you're doing, but our OKRs in the company, number one, two, three, thing to fix this next 6 months has changed. But as long as our relationship is good, I can intro you to someone else, / like, we're definitely gonna pick this up later. And then it's up to the salesperson, I think, one, to have that foresight and long-term vision. And then two, you know, in sales, pipeline is everything. You put all your eggs in one basket, you've kind of done this to yourself anyway. So
yeah. And the people who do lay off because they respect that you know, this is not a priority right now, they're gonna have a better chance at getting the sale down the road than the ones who are still saying, oh, can I still get, like, some people still ask for my time, but I'm like, yeah, I'm literally jammed back to back every day, right? And I'm like, if it's not part of our priorities, I'm hoping you can respect that and file me away for later, because like, it doesn't make any sense for me to take a 30-minute meeting for something that's not in the company, you know, the top company priority. But I do see promise in it, and I'm open to that conversation, right? So that's like, would be great to have, you know, this, you know, like, just be basically have foresight, but hey, this could really, you know, because I'll be honest, then it could be me just like blocking them for good. that's one where, and I think we might, you know, might get into some pet peeves maybe in this conversation, but like, you know, those are things I could get into as well.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do pet peeves. I think it's so helpful for sellers to hear, especially coming from a buyer, because they may think, oh, I'm crushing, I'm doing these things, I'm all over this person, but I'm sure you have some pet peeves of like, you really love a product, it's going to solve a problem. You're like,
exactly. No, exactly. I mean, even before, you know, before having that first conversation, I do like some bespoke messaging. So yeah, like if it's an automated email, I think I could spot it often, but then the ones that like are on that cadence, but like are so compressed, I put those to block. I'll be honest. Like if I get two to three emails in the same week, and if it's like somewhat interesting, but not like a core thing on my mind, right? I might put it on block, right? Because I'm like, I don't know if this is gonna be an endless, you know, kind of like a parade of just emails, right? And so for me, that's a pet peeve to have these, like, you know, things that are on autopilot. And if something might not be an autopilot, there might be actual person, but then they more than once in the week, right? I think you once in the week should be, I think should be the cap, like, at least for me.
Yeah.
Maybe for, you know, like it just then it gets really annoying, right? Like, yeah, maybe one in LinkedIn, one in the email. Okay, fine. But like multiple emails, and I get that happens often. Like this week, I've probably gotten two or three companies have sent me multiple emails in the week, right? So that's a big one for me. What else like really sticks out? I think, I think not having any context on the company, right? So the flip side, whereas a good person has context, the other one just sees us and it's obviously just seen us in a screener that we fit the criteria and then just like put the blast in, right? And then if I do engage with somebody and they kind of don't have any real context, I'm like, hey, like the homework wasn't done. And then that like, you know, then I just educate them a little bit more on the business. But somebody say, oh, I see, you know, I think you're a software company, you're X size, you know, you have series, whatever, like, you know, this is the sweet spot for us, right? So then I'm like, oh, okay, this person really, like, I think done, like now I will believe that there's actually maybe a fit because that person like seen the qualities of the company and thinks that their software could like be aligned to where we are in our life cycle.
Yeah. I think about it from the sales seat of like those first or second calls are so important to like show you've done your research. And I feel like the easiest way to kill that is we hop on a call and I'm like, hey, like, where's your company based? What do you guys do again? And you're like, these things that they should know if they take 5 to 15 minutes to look it up, right? Like,
exactly.
If you miss some of those key, like Google search, see what the company does, where they're based, where the person, you know, do a quick LinkedIn on the person. Like that's going to get you way further than.
And then the other thing is like, I'm not a big fan of phone calls. So like, I normally won't pick up phone calls from numbers I don't recognize, but then I'll get the voicemails and like, that's just a waste of their time. It's a delete. So like, I don't think anyone's hooked me out through a phone call. This is the day of, you know, for me, it's just, email, LinkedIn, right? Most likely. And even LinkedIn, you get a lot of outreach in LinkedIn. So that's also curious, like, you know, now the requests are fast and furious, right? And I usually only accept if I think there's like this software could actually solve a current problem, right? Mm-hmm. And if I do a quick analysis, I'll even do a quick crunch base, like look, right? When I get the ad, and then I'm like, if it's not there, but I'm like, maybe I'll add this person. And when I do another sweep down the road, I might add them because it makes sense, right? And I'm actually curious what other folks like me are, what their strategy is. Do they just blanket accept everyone? Because then they'll get a ton of outreach. It's, for me, that it's noise, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's 2022 now, and I feel like LinkedIn has proven to be a valuable way to reach out to people. But because more people know that, your inbox and connection requests is going to be more swamped. So now it's more reason to take the time, be thoughtful about it, not just add it to a part of your sequence and kind of not think about it.
Exactly.
Got it. Cool. Raqib, this has been super fun. Before we wrap, I would love it if you could tell us a little bit about Chainalysis. I know it is one of the hottest and fastest growing companies in the crypto and Web3 space, but why don't you just share a little bit about, you know, what's got you so excited?
Sure. With Chainalysis, you know, at its, you know, MongoDB is a SaaS software company. So Chainalysis is actually at its heart a SaaS software company who happens to be in the crypto blockchain ecosystem. And so for me, what attracted me to the role, and yeah, I believe, you know, crypto is human progress, right? But obviously there's, you know, with anything in finance, there could be illicit activity happening, right? And, you know, crypto is no different. But Chainalysis software is looking to solve that issue, right? And bringing that trust and transparency to the entire ecosystem, to both the public and the private sector, right? So we sell tools to the public sector that helps them investigate, you know, illicit activity within the blockchain, right? Within like on-chain activity being tied back to real life entities and bad actors, right? And then our software for the private side, we're providing compliance software that is then helping validate transactions, making sure, you know, the transactions are clean, all right? And it's a help, this ecosystem that's really feeding off each other with data. And, you know, we're by far the leader in this space, and we were lucky enough to, you know, attract some good solid investors this past year, raised over $300 million this past year, and really using those resources to continue to iterate on our product. And, you know, as everyone's following in this space, you know, with DeFi, NFTs, now the impending Web 3.0 kind of ecosystem developing, you know, this is only going to, you know, eventually need the tools that we've created, right, and adapting to that world. So it's super exciting. We're hiring all over the place. I think we have around 120 roles open right now. So if anyone listening has people they know interested in crypto and helping solve, you know, really some interesting challenges in this ecosystem, you know, send them our way. I'm very excited, right? And right now we're just continuing to grow. I was in employee 150, I think, when I joined in April 2020. We're at right about 500 people now, and growing, probably doubling this coming year. So it's really exciting.
Wow. I love that. Really exciting company and space to be a part of. Raqib, thanks again.
You know, great seeing you. And then, yeah, it's great that, you know, we had that salesperson kind of relationship with me being the decision maker. And it's, you know, cool to be in this discussion with you and continue to keep you up to date on how things go in this world. And love to have the chat again.
Cool. Let's do it. All right. Thanks, Raqib.
Take care.
And that's our show. If you like this episode and you want to hear more, be sure to follow Bowery Capital on LinkedIn and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to these things. Also, if you know someone who's a buyer of B2B technology and you think would be awesome to have them on this podcast and we can ask them some questions, please reach out. My email is eugene.godso@bowerycap.com. All right, see you next time.